Welcome to Intimate Conversations. I'm your host, Alana Pratt. I'm passionate about your relationships thriving and your family flourishing through a healthy, intimate relationship with yourself, with Source, and with your beloved. So sit back, relax, because it's time to get intimate. Well, our two next delicious women here on Intimate Conversations Live have been on my radar for a while. And when I looked into my dashboard that my wonderful staff presents to me every single week, I said, yes, this is awesome. They're going to be on the show this week. The amazing Dr. Danielle Harrell and Celeste Hirschman. They are San Francisco-based sex and relationship coaches who help men, women, and couples realize their full erotic potential and deepen their experience of pleasure, intimacy, and connection. They are clearly on the perfect show. We are so glad to have them, for they are the creators of the Somatica Method of Sex Therapy and Relationship Coaches, and they are the authors of Cockfidence, not Confidence, but Cockfidence, The Extraordinary Lover's Guide to Being the Man You Want to Be and Driving Women Wild. So we would like to talk about their amazing book, and they've got an upcoming workshop as well in the San Francisco area. You can find out more at alanapratt.com/Celeste Danielle, so I'll spell that for you, CelesteDanielle, Celeste Danielle. So without further ado, you beautiful, gorgeous, sexy women, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much. We're so happy to be here.
Yes, so we're very excited. Thanks for having us.
Oh, it's such a pleasure, and I love how intimate we already got before the show began, that you're sitting in a parking lot. I can't tell you how many interviews I've done in very strange places on the planet, so thank you for, in your busy schedules, being able to make it work. I love it.
Right, when you're entrepreneurs, you just go with what works.
Yeah, exactly. So I really honor the work that you do and that you're entrepreneurs, and I'd like to know, just for the audience and for me, like, how did you meet and how did you decide to create this company together?
Well, we were both on our pathways around our, I was getting my master's in human sexuality studies and Danielle was getting her PhD in human sexuality studies, and we ended up in the sexological bodywork certificate training, and we met there, and we were such different women that I don't know that we ever could have had any clue that we would have ended up as business partners, as lifelong business partners.
Yeah.
It's like a marriage. but it was, the way that we complement each other, I think, and the way that we are so different really has created, has helped us create a practice and a business that's so, you know, well-rounded and profound in so many ways. So I feel so lucky that we met.
Mm. So, and you seem, Danielle, to have a very sexy accent. Where are you originally from, the States or someplace else?
Thank you. I'm originally Israeli.
Ah, very nice. You know, back in the day when I was 19, I'm from Canada, and I left on my Uncle Phil's 18-wheeler semi-truck for Hollywood. And I failed. I didn't have a visa, so I couldn't stay. So I moved over to Japan for 4 years, and I met so many Israelis who were traveling the world after their 3 years in the military. So that accent just, I guess, reminds me of my yesteryears traveling around. Being a backpacker, that's awesome.
Yeah, I was definitely in one of those backpacking trips to Japan and Thailand, and definitely, I was there too.
So. Nice. I'm 44. I wonder if you're a similar age and we partied in another lifetime together and never knew it.
We did.
That's so awesome, because I've done the whole Koh Phangan full moon party, like the whole thing.
I love it. It's wonderful.
Wow. So maybe we could start with you, Danielle. Like, how do you describe Celeste? Like, she's like your compliment. Like, what do you know about her? How can you express who she is to us and the contribution she makes to the men and the women and the couples that you work with?
Yeah. Celeste is amazing. She's my inspiration. Many times when I get kind of feel kind of stuck or uncomfortable in sessions, I ask myself, what would Celeste do now? So she is with me in sessions. You get two coaches in one session every time. Then
wow.
She's extremely, extremely compassionate. I think her level of compassion is unbelievable. And she is very smart. And she's blushing here.
Love it.
She's very, very smart, so I feel like we can have, like, very witty, you know, conversations. And really, like, Celeste and I couldn't be more different people in our background and the way that we think. I don't know if the way we think about life is pretty similar now, but the way we, you know, our backgrounds are very, very different. So, yeah.
Mm. That's beautiful. And Celeste, how about Danielle?
The thing that blows my mind about Danielle, because I have the pleasure of teaching with her all the time, is I watch the way that I get to watch her do practice sessions or example sessions with people, and I just watch the way that, like, she uses her entire body, heart, soul, and mind to connect with other human beings. And it's like what she does is magic. It's like she just feels people with her whole self, and she knows so perfectly in every moment, like, what is going on and what needs to happen next. And I just, like, you know, I feel like I have to process things through my brain, and then I get a little bit more to my body, and Danielle just, like, body. So grounded, so present in herself, and it keeps me really grounded because, you know, I can do the words a lot, but she really reminds me to stay in my body all the time, and that's been a huge transformation just in my life. And also she taught me how to be greedy. I appreciate her so much for that. To ask for everything I want and to not just ask once, to ask as many times as I need to, and to teach people how to love me, and to teach other people how to teach people how to love them, you know, so that's been a really wonderful thing about me.
I just have to say, I wish I was sitting in between the two of you, snuggled up in your car right now.
I know, so much love there. Who knew you'd have that much love with a business partner? My friend, business partner, she's everything, yeah.
We call it words and music.
Oh, I can totally feel it. So it's beautiful. So talk a little more about the concept of being greedy. I had the pleasure of watching the videos on your site, CelesteandDanielle.com, and you mentioned it there. So explain to the listeners what you mean by greedy.
I can just give an example from this last week, you know, where I'm with a lover and we're connecting with each other and he's just not quite getting it right. And I think my old self would have just said, oh, well, next time, or, you know, like, forget it, or I already asked twice, or I showed him a couple times, and this time I was like, nope, I'm just going to keep showing you until you get it, and then I get to have a great time, and lots of orgasms, and, you know, it really makes a difference to not back down around what we want, and helping women particularly be greedy for themselves around sex, which I think actually turns their partners on so much, because then they actually have the ability to turn women on. Teaching women how to be greedy and how to teach people what they want, and, you know, especially because women's bodies are more complex and what we need is more complex, I think it's really, really helpful to be tenacious.
I feel that it is really teaching women that they are important enough, that they are important to really get the treatment that they need to flourish. Yeah.
Wow. This is, I very much agree with you. And yet I do all my sessions on the phone or on Skype. I guess I do intensives as well, like 2-day intensives with people, but I don't do like the hands-on work that you do. Although I think I did in a prior life. Sometimes it takes everything in me not to reach out. And there have been sessions where I'll just hold somebody and they'll just cry in my arms. I'm so curious of the work that you do where you get to actually touch people and not just be the space, but be the touch to heal. How did you decide that this is how you wanted to work, and what did your friends say, and was it kind of weird at first, or did you know from a little girl that this is what you wanted to do? How did that come to pass?
Yeah. So for me, it was really realizing that it was a realization that I want to do hands-on work. I'm coming from a background of therapy and talking, and
yeah.
It didn't feel like it's reached far. And I really
yeah.
wanted, so many times, I want to hug people and touch them, and I feel that, like, the learning happens when people experience things in their bodies.
Yes, yes.
And it's like trying to learn soccer without ever hitting a ball. You know, I can see the World Cup for years and I would never know how to play soccer, So there's something about really getting in there and learning how to do it and get feedback and see how and feel how it feels like to touch someone and the response that you get when you touch
yeah.
someone in a way that feels good to them. So there's so much in the energy that makes
yeah.
a difference.
And making the distinction for somebody between good, connected, sensual touch and touch that's sort of like surfacey or, you know, mindless or rote or for the other person but not connected to yourself. Like really helping people feel the difference in their body is so profound. I think what the other magical power that Danielle and I have is that we sort of we're doing things that are very radical, but we do them with such power and confidence and presence that there's like no judgment that comes our way. I never feel judged about what I do. I feel very accepted by my friends and family. I mean, my family is a very accepting family anyway and always has been. But, you know, just by the world, when I talk about what I do, it's the way that I talk about it and the way that Danielle talks about it that I think, you know, just people who would normally be like, what are you doing? Or like, wow, that sounds like it would help a lot. Wait here, let me send you some clients. You know, that's a lot.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
It's beautiful. So to be very specific with myself and the listeners of what you, is it close on or close off or is it surrogate sex or it, like explain like the actual physical touch that occurs in your radical and yet so non-judgmental and safe sessions.
We call it energetic surrogacy. So
energetic, I got it.
We stay with our clothes on, and there's so much. I think people jump to the action of sex way too soon, and there's so much. Not that I'm against it. Sex is awesome. But there's so much that you can learn about the pre-sex experience, just the looking at someone and touching and breathing together and feeling sensations. There's so much that people can bring from their eroticism that's not about nudity.
Right.
Once you learn how to be in that moment of savoring, you can take it all the way through any sexual act, but it's the savoring and the energetic build up and the teasing and the, you know, just the smelling and taste, just like that sort of moment to moment energy of sex that once you really are steeped in it, you can take it, you know, in any direction. But that's where we help.
I love that. For me, I grew up being like a dancer and really judging my body in the mirror compared to other women. And then I moved into modeling, which only made things worse. And then once I came to LA, I started to take more sacred erotic movement. And now I do S Factor pole dancing. And with my own practice, I'm just learning that this sexual energy, I can be penetrated by the sun. I can like let the breeze flirt with me. This sexual energy can be a 24/7 erotic, yummy, juicy, savoring experience of life. I can be it as a mother. It doesn't have to have the copulation energy to it. It can still be that safe sanctuary of tenderness or fierceness or whatever is required in the moment. So I'm wondering about as you grew up, as women, how did your own sexuality unfold? Were you ever nervous or holding back? And did you go into it, this practice, path of your careers to open yourself up? Or were you erotically gifted since you were five and always been easy for you?
I have to say, Alana, I feel very fortunate in this realm because my family, like I said, was very accepting. I had hippie parents. I was born in the hate, right? So I had people were, nudity was normal in my family and people were very comfortable with their bodies and there was no body shame. You know, my grandmother was on a diet, but I only saw her once a year and nobody else was on a diet. Everybody else was eating something wanted and doing what they wanted and dancing the way they wanted. So there was a lot of freedom for me to just develop around my sexuality. And I was connected with my sexuality at a very young age. And then later, once I got to school, you know, there was certainly rumblings because, of course, if you're a sexually open woman, you're going to get called a slut. I had big breasts. And so I sort of definitely got some of that backlash. What I chose to do was to just claim it. Like, okay, I am a slut. I'm going to, you know, wear my low-cut shirts and my high skirts. And I wasn't having sex with a lot of people. I liked to make out a lot. That was fun. But I was just being a sexual being throughout my life. And I think that, you know, what happened was people would come to me and say, hey, I have these questions. I want to talk to you. Because they knew I wasn't going to be judgmental. And I was always
right.
Like that. Was very comfortable. I kind of knew that's what I wanted to be and do when I grew up. So it was that kind of a path for me, very open and free.
Nice.
And
Danielle? And
like everything in our life, we're so different. So I'm coming from the opposite experience, which, and again, Celeste really inspired me many times around her shamelessness. I'm always like, you know, like, oh my God, I can't believe she actually sings in the bank, you know, and dances in the bank, you know, in line. So I think that
I love it.
She keeps inspiring me and embarrassing me a little bit, you know. But I always take it as a learning opportunity. I came up from the opposite direction. I grew up with a lot. My mom was always on a diet. She was always torturing her body and putting herself in smaller shoes and smaller clothes. And I grew up monitored around movement and around my body. So I have... you know, I had a lot of healing and still have. It's, you know, body image is one of the hardest things that women deal with in our culture. It's not only reinforced by individuals, it's reinforced by a whole culture. And you live in LA, you definitely know about that, right?
Yeah, yeah.
It's really hard to measure up and be good enough for whatever's showing up on magazines. And it's impossible. Even the models or the... can't catch up with the way the picture looks like. So for me, a lot of it was coming out of this shame experience and starting to own my body and own my sexuality and have my own process of loving my body. And
I love
being
it.
Able to exhibit and exhibit sexuality or even movement. For me, it was a lot around movement. In a bigger than 101, even on 101, it was hard, but definitely in the bigger group experiences. I remember us teaching one of the first women's workshops that we taught, and I was like, yeah, so let's suggest to do like an erotic promenade, and I was like, that sounds like a great idea. I realized I need to participate in it too. Yeah, it was just walking in the line of, you know, two lines of women watching you walk. I was horrified. I couldn't move. I was so frozen by shame. I couldn't move. And I told them, you know what? This is the hardest experience I've ever done. Harder than birth. You know? And I did the birth thing, you know. And I took a deep breath and I had to cry all the way as I was walking.
Wow.
It was really challenging for me.
I remember the first time I got into the pole dancing class that I took, and the lights are low. There's only a red lamp on, no mirrors, obviously no men. And we were asked to do the whole first hour of the workout touching ourselves. Yes, we were doing push-ups or butt lifts or leg lifts or whatever, but we would never take our hands off our body. And I realized that I only touched myself either for self-pleasure or to turn a man on. I never touched myself for that more innocent pleasure or just for the sake of pleasure or just for me. And I wept. I wept for months feeling the closing of the gap of that block I had from just loving my sensuality. So I'm interested now to express, it sounds like, I don't know what your relationship situations are. I'm a single mom. I have an 11-year-old, and you just mentioned, Danielle, a baby. What are your relationships like in your life right now?
they're wonderful.
Yay!
Yeah. I want to say as a mom, I definitely make it a big point. I'm very touching. I love to touch. And as a mom, I just, you know, I have teenager, both my kids, and at the beginning and the end of the spectrum of teenagerhood. And I love touching and caressing and hugging and smooching and, you know, definitely the whole spectrum. And I love it that my son, who is 17, that would die if he knew I would talk about him on the radio. In that way, he still loves hugging, and I love it.
Yeah.
I love that he still feels very secure and comfortable coming to us and giving us hugs. And yeah,
I think the thing about relationships that I do want to say, because they, you know, I really feel like my relationships are wonderful, and part of that is just because I'm always growing and learning and dealing with my edges of comfort around, you know, safety and abandonment and am I lovable enough? You know, I don't think we ever get done growing around those things. And if we can be honest and conscious and vulnerable, I think one of the things that Danielle and I really do is we teach from our vulnerability and we teach our vulnerability so that nobody's saying, yeah, well, I've got it all figured out. Just come over to me. I'll tell you how to do it. You know, I feel that's the least passionate thing that we do as teachers is to pretend we've got it all together.
Yeah.
And so a lot of what we do when we're in relationship with our clients is we practice vulnerability, and we do it in our lives, in our partnerships as well. So, you know, I think it's such an amazing learning and a journey, and I love supporting people in being honest about their fears and insecurities and their loves and desires, because it really opens up a whole different realm of connection that's possible.
Mm.
And I want to say I feel that important for me to also do it in my parenting on top of the other relationships I'm having with people, clients, people. It's really important for me to bring my vulnerability to my parenting because, you know, it's so important for kids to know that their parents are not all set, you know, that there's still a lot of growing to do and you're not done when you are a teenager, you know, or when you left home.
Right.
Allows a lot of really deep communication.
I completely agree. I took my boy to that movie Boyhood the other night, and it was just, he's 11, and there was just a lot of talk about sex and drugs, and there was divorces going on, and I'm going through a custody situation. And when he came out, he put his arm, or he grabbed my arm and put it close around his neck with my hand on his heart. And we just walked back to the car in the dark with the warm breeze. And I just felt so grateful to be that safe place for touch and talk. And so I completely get it in terms of parenting. It's great to hear another mother that does that. I love it. How do you help your clients find their truth of whether they want to be in a monogamous marriage, if they want to be in an open marriage, if they want to be married at all, if they want to have several partners, if they want to have male or female? Like, how do you help people find what's true for them and navigate that?
I feel that people know. I feel like the journey many times is not to help them know. It's help them trust what they already have, what they already fantasize and want inside them. And even trust enough that it's worth experimenting with it and seeing if it's really for them. You know, some people have an idea that that's what they want, but they're not really willing to commit to this kind of lifestyle and the transition of, you know, like the communication that it demands. So I feel a lot of it is supporting them in the process of owning it and seeing what's in it for them and what exactly, how they want it to look like and what kind of, and why they want it, you know, what it fulfills for them that is really, I believe, is a core theme, a core need in people's being.
I call it like turning up the voice of desire also, because, you know, a lot of people were taught at a young age that their desire was irrelevant, that other people were going to tell them what to do and that it didn't matter what they wanted. And so some people just learned to turn that voice way down and ignore it and talk themselves out of it and explain why they don't really deserve what they want. So we really help people in an embodied way turn up the voice of desire and start listening to the things that make them feel excited and elated in their body, the things that make them feel compressed and pressurized in their body, and start to differentiate and then to start to communicate about what they want and need. And the other thing is that, you know, we think like, I need to figure out what I need for the rest of my life, and I need to make a contract with somebody where I'm going to stick to this exact way of being for the rest of my life. And I try to help people so much get back into the present moment, because who knows what the last years from now is going to want. I certainly don't. I know what the rest of today wants. And tomorrow, I'm going to know what Celeste tomorrow wants. And relationships have to be an ongoing negotiation of growth and communication. And I think, actually, the structure is way less relevant than how we continue to be open that our partners might change, that we might change, and that we need to communicate through those changes, love each other, empathize with each other, accept each other, and see what we're capable of handling in terms of allowing our partners to be as big as they are, you know, all of the different ways that they are, and allowing ourselves to be that. So I try to bring it into the present moment more. And, you know, I was talking to somebody the other day, and he had just gotten an email that said, like, you know, I don't want this to be too serious or something, right? And I said, I don't want this to be too serious is the same as let's put a wedding ring on. It's just a way to try to control the structure of something that actually is an ongoing negotiation.
God, I love the way you just articulated that, because it seems structures are so confining, and yet there can be a system, maybe, I don't know if that's the right word, a system of communication that keeps you honored and honoring and authentic and vulnerable, but without the confines of a structure. Am I making sense?
Absolutely. That's a good, yes. We are talking about the same thing, right? And sure, you can say, you know, I have a commitment to work through this with you. I believe, you know, and a commitment to be who I am in that process. I feel like people don't understand the commitments that they can actually make. So they make these outrageous commitments and then feel horrible because they're incapable of, you know, meeting them and still being true to themselves. And that is a huge mistake that we make as a culture as a whole.
And I want to add some examples that are not only about opening relationship or not, that people make commitments to things that they don't want to stick with, and then they need to go into the system of cheating. And, you know, for example, porn. You know, I have a few couples that, in order to keep things safe for their partner and not freak them out, they had to commit to not watch porn. And I said, like, really, how long is that agreement going to last? Because that's something that you were doing before you knew your partner, and you're probably going to be doing, you know, here and there for different reasons. So I really encourage them to explore the freak out that their partner has around porn, instead of them committing to, I'll never watch porn because it worries you or it makes you feel not attractive, or, you know. So there's a lot all those negotiations are ongoing negotiations, and I think people just so scared of disappointing their partner or bringing up what in our culture we call negative feelings, or that they try to shut it down and shortcut the process, when I think that these are just opportunities for more growth. Not everyone's ready for growth in every moment, and that's okay to take breaks from growth. But these are just amazing opportunities to stretch and see what is really you need now here.
Yeah.
Is it about porn, or it's about your feeling of worth and value?
Yeah. You too seem to have, like you're very non-judgmental. And so when a freak out occurs, you don't make the freak out bad. You're like, okay, great, let's talk about this. And I'm very similar. In fact, my son's teacher, he just started back to school, and this teacher has like a no rules total self-responsibility policy, and that's not what the kids are used to. And within the first week, there's total chaos. And you could see the teacher kind of blushing a little bit, like thinking, am I going to be one of those parents that are going to go, you know, you better put the rules back in, and da 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 da. And I said, oh, no, I think this is a great sign. This is wonderful. If you know, this is where the phoenix rises out of the flames. I'm behind you 100%. This is how we teach them to think. And you should have seen him just like, his whole body just went, ah, she gets me. She's behind me. This is awesome. So I'm blessed in my practice that people say things like, I can't believe I'm telling you this, or I've never told anybody this, because I don't judge. And it's because I've gone through years and years of learning to not judge myself. And it's such a privilege to be in these, you know, sanctuaries with people and watch the shame dissolve. If we went back to the porn example, we'll just use it like as a template. How would you take a couple through the authentic freak out and the truth and hold space for them and create a different possibility? Take us through how you would handle that for both the man and the woman and the communication.
So first we talk a little about, we set it up. It's not like what I'm going to share with you is not going to be like the right away thing that we're doing right away. So the setup would be to kind of talk a little bit about the fears and what's happening usually to her versus to him, you know, and how we talk about the dynamic of how he doesn't want to, how much he loves her and doesn't want her to have those negative feelings, but at the same time, that's something that he does for himself. So we talk about the feelings that each of them have around porn. And then the experiential moment is many times after we set it up for him to kind of be able to listen to her feelings and then say something like, you know, sweetie, I love you so much and I still want to watch porn. And she's going to have a freak out. And he's going to listen to her freak out and not try to fix it, not try to judge it. Many times women are going to come up with all the feelings that are stuck in there about competing with porn, not being good enough, feeling like their partner betraying them and, you know, running away with the porn stars. You know, they will never be able to measure up. So all those feelings come up, and that's the healing process. You know, I don't need to do the healing for them. They can do the healing with each other by holding that space and being able to cry it out and feel not judged.
And I think, with Danielle and I, the thing that we have as a team is that when I hear her talk, I can see, you know, all of the compassion and space that she makes for the woman in the situation. And I think when I work, you know, I work a lot with men because I relate to them a little bit more in the ways that they have been raised. Similar, you know, I didn't have a lot of shame around sex, more like a lot of desire and not knowing what to do with it.
But yeah.
More men experience. And so, you know, I think in those situations, what men feel is like they're not supposed to want everything that they want. It's bad, you know, like too much. And a lot of the de-shamifying work that I do with men is to be able to claim those desires, because they talk to their partners with all of that shame intact. The women are going to go, oh my God, there must be something wrong with this. You feel so bad.
Right.
And horrible. Evil about it, you know, of course it's horrible, instead of him going, you know, this is just one beautiful part of who I am, and there are so many beautiful parts that I can share with you, and maybe we can even watch some porn together, if they
right.
can shamify. And I think one of the reasons that relationships break up, and a lot of, you know, women get left like, I didn't even know anything was wrong, and now he's just leaving me, is because men like to think, well, there's no way that my desire is going to be accepted here, I can't talk about it.
Right.
Can't share these feelings, they're bad, they're wrong, so I'm just going to go somewhere else where it's safe to be me, right, instead of being able to talk over time.
Yeah.
So making space for the fears and the desires in the relationship is really essential in working through stuff like, you know, a porn or desire to be sexual with another person or, you know, I mean, even like...
Or fetishes.
You know, fetishes, but I mean, even sometimes like I want to... You know, I want to be able to travel a lot more than I feel like is okay, or I need more time just being out by myself or with my friends. Like sometimes those will bring up the same kinds of shame around desire and judgment and frustration and fear and insecurity. So it really is so much more about the feelings than the content, right? But when, with sex, the shame level can be so much higher because there's so much shaming around in our culture.
Yeah. I completely agree. And for those of you that came on just a little bit late, I want you to know that if you go to alanapratt.com/Celeste Danielle, CelesteDanielle, Celeste Danielle, that's where the book Cockfidence, The Extraordinary Lover's Guide to Being the Man You Want to Be and Driving Women Wild can be found. So tell us in that book, because that's a book for men, I'm assuming, right? How do you teach men, and I know you have a workshop coming up in January that I'd like to know about as well for men, how do you guide men to be shameless around their sexuality so that they can have these conversations with their partner?
Yeah, I think that's the perfect bridge because it really is, you know, the opportunity for men to stay in sustainable long-term relationships is about them actually being true to themselves and honoring their desires while at the and keeping their boundaries while at the same time really empathizing and understanding their partners and their partner's fears and sharing vulnerably their own fears and insecurities. So the whole first book is really philosophy about how men can engage with women from that sense of empowerment and vulnerability and, you know, connection with their desires, honesty about their desires, while taking care of their partner's emotional well-being and their own. And then the second half of the book is really about, like, how to be a great lover and how to share around desires and fantasies and what women are looking for around sex and sensuality and build up and all of those kinds of things. So we tried to create a really full book that had a lot of information, both about how to be true to yourself and how to be a great lover and partner to women.
I just interviewed a couple, and he was 90. And she was in her, I think, late 60s or early 70s, and they'd been together for 30 years, and they said they never use words as a weapon, and they're 100% honest with each other all the time and take 100% responsibility for their own desires and actions and thoughts and all the rest of it. I'm wondering, in your the people that you coach, is there ever a time when the other partner, be it the man or the woman, just isn't, I don't know, capable of receiving that information at this point of their growth, and there's ever a time to withhold information, not as a secret, not as a lie, but this is just part of me? Or do you always try to help them get to that place of 100% vulnerability, honesty, breathe through the freak out, and maintain that connection and have the next breakthrough evolution of relationship unfold for a partner? Did that question make sense?
It's a really good question, and, you know, it's basically the foundation. Answering that question is the foundation of the couple's book that we're in the process of writing right now, because there are two things that a partnership needs in order to really thrive. One of them is connection or attachment, right? So a safe foundation from which they can jump off and be themselves. And they might not be ready to hear everything until there's that sense of safety, like, I'm here with you. I'm not going anywhere. You know, I'm not going to judge you and accuse you of being a horrible person for the things that you want. Until that safety of acceptance and connection is established, I don't think there's a place where you can say everything that you want to say. But we really work on establishing that connection first and then helping people to be true to who they are, right? So, you know, when I hear about this couple of 60, 90 who, you know, are always honest and taking responsibility for themselves, I feel a little bit of a twinge of like, that's interesting. I wonder what the attachment level is. I wonder what kind of work they had to do with each other to know that they were super safe in that situation. Or sort of individualistic, like we're each just doing our own thing and we're sort of hanging out with each other while we do it. So, I always want to see like what's there and what's missing, you know, like what can keep in around intimacy, because we actually do need to rely on each other. You know, we aren't just individuals. When you team up with another person, you want to be able to throw a tantrum sometimes or have them hold you while you are feeling your insecurity. How you build those connections and also help people enjoy their freedom to be who they are at the same time in couple dumb or you know, however many people are in the relationship.
I completely agree with you that foundation of connection is the foundation of all of those possibilities of communication and growth and evolution, etc. What can a man expect because I believe the next workshop is for men just right in the new year in January. What can they expect to experience, let go of, step into at that?
Well, I think it's actually a mind-blowing, expansive experience, because what men step into in that experience is being in presence with women, so they actually get to practice and get feedback about how they're coming across. Maybe first, I would say, in presence with themselves, and then in presence with women, and then in connection with their desire with women, and getting feedback about how they come across that way, and then actually getting real-time feedback on how they're touching. So in the workshop, we do have women who model and receive touch all over their bodies and get feedback about that, so men can learn how to touch everywhere, learn how to give amazing orgasms. And I think there are very few places that are safe, supportive, and boundaries where men can learn that kind of approach to women's bodies. So it's a profoundly transformative experience. And at the end of the day, it's like the roof has sort of been blown off.
Wow.
By the power of the learning. And also, I think what we get from men so often is like, wow, this is such a strange experience. I couldn't have imagined feeling so safe, so comfortable, so supported both by the teachers and by the other men in the room. So it's a profoundly transformative experience, I think, around connection and even around community.
Yeah. Well, I'm sure you attract quite a high level and a conscious level of people just by who you're being. That makes complete sense to me. When the men come, what do you find is the biggest block or misconception that most men move through in terms of how a woman really wants to be touched and how you really can please a woman?
I think the biggest misconception is just that women don't want sex. You know, I think a lot of men...
And they're blown away because they feel so lucky to see the generosity of the women in the room around that.
So just that getting past that belief, like women don't want to feel your desire, it's too overt, it's too much. Helping men find that place of like, I want you and it feels good to want, just like enjoying their desire and feeling comfortable with it instead of anxious and fearful that they're going to overwhelm their partners or feeling like they have to pull back so they aren't really being sexy at all. So I think that's the biggest block, is them learning how to get comfortable with their erotic energy so that it's not really being held back, so they can kind of like hang out and enjoy it. And then that kind of magnetizes women and opportunities. And they do have to learn how to initiate, because most women won't initiate overtly. But if they're comfortable and in their erotic energy, it's just so much smoother and easier to go from that to a nice touch or, a kiss or something like that than it is to go from this place of anxiety and overwhelm, right? So a lot of what you do is drop into the power of their connection with their own erotic energy.
I totally get it. One of the ways I speak to my clients, I'm like, okay, I can feel you in your eyes. Okay, I can feel you in your heart. Can't feel you in your pelvis, your cock. Penetrate me energetically with all those things coming at me. And they're like, oh, but that's sleazy, or that's like a slimy guy. And my experience is when it's just a cock, okay, maybe it'll come across as sleazy, but when it's integrated in the wholeness of their being and all of them is showing up, you feel his nobility, you feel his tenderness, and you feel his dark with heart capacity to claim and ravish you, like you feel it all. How do you, I don't know if that makes any sense or what have you, but how do you bring forth their erotic sexual energy in a way that's shameless?
Right, I think that makes a lot of sense. And what I see men getting into is some sort of anxiety, like, oh no, if I don't get in there now, I'm not going to get in there at all. Like, the opportunity is going to close. And so there's so much anxiety that they just go into this sort of rushed, just sexual place instead of just being like you said, in their heart, in their belly, in their cock, much more integrated in their whole body and slowing it down and just seeing like there's so much like intensity and deliciousness that can be had. Playing with that energy and not just feeling it all, but also not feeling like you have to hold it back. So we just hang out with people in that energy and help them keep like breathing and getting deeper into their body and feeling their feet, feeling their legs, feeling their cock as they're connecting and feeling their heart. And from that place, slowly going into connection, touch, different kinds of intimacy, so they can start to get their bearings in that place, right? It's like, and once they get their bearings, they're like, oh, that's easy. Like, I can stay with myself. I can stay with this person. If she freaks out a little bit around her boundaries or comfort, I can let her freak out, and I can still hang and, you know, not feel rejected. Stay loving and empathetic to what she's struggling with, which is, oh my God, am I a slut? Is this okay? You know, all the stuff that women go through.
Right.
And why they're going through that and how to hang with them through that really helps them relax and not feel so anxious in their connections with women.
This is so great. So just to shift over to women for a second, for us being sensual in our erotic energy and in our heart and out in the world and receiving when we're being that, a heightened degree of men's attention. How do you help women navigate? What are some tools to help them navigate their sacred erotic nature out in the world once it's been awakened?
So we teach women to do it. That's the motto, do it for yourself. Women get so lost in all the eyes that look at them. You know, either try to constrict them or try to extract something from them. The women get really lost in the observation and people checking them out. And we teach them to relax and do it because it feels good and start to own those sensations in the body, start to make it for themselves and not to try to elicit something from someone else. So impact someone in that, you know, like overwhelm someone with their sexuality, because women do this, you know, kind of confusing dance around their sexuality. They can be totally dressed up sexy, but then, you know, if they're being picked up in the bar, they're going to say, no, what do you think, who do you think I am? You know? And helping a woman say that there's nothing wrong with her because it feels good to her. So we wake up this embodied sensation of aliveness that is part of their sexuality and teach them to celebrate it for themselves. And then when it's more integrated and embodied, they can decide who they share it with and at what level.
Right.
So much pressure to be in relationship. I say men objectify women for sex, women objectify men for relationship.
Right?
these poor husband father objects, right? We're the sex object, they're the husband father object. And to start to find, like, and a lot of times women will make decisions not based on their erotic desire or their pleasure, but on, like, I need to be in a relationship. I need to have the proper person in that box, right? And that so much of our identity comes from that. And so we're not choosing with our whole bodies. We're not choosing with our sensuality. And there's so much anger and frustration that comes out of not doing it that way in the long term.
Yeah.
So really
I'm dancing in the bed, high-fiving you right now. Yes, yes, yes.
I'm helping them with the choose from their pussies, right? From a little bit deeper down in themselves, in their bodies.
And do you find, because this is what I find personally and with my clients, when we're in that embodied state, so many women are like, no, but I need to be safe. What if someone tries to hurt me? And to me, that fear is kind of spinning in their mind, and they're disconnected from their intuition and instinct in their body, and then they end up getting hurt, and then they're right about it, that they need to be safe or men are bad, etc. And my experience is when I'm down more in my body, in my sensuality, for me, as you were saying, for my pleasure, in the mix of that is total awareness of who's coming up behind me on my left. And I can sense it. Or immediately when I'm in my body, I can sense whether I need to turn my energy down to a one and handle something. It's all inclusive. It happens simultaneously. Can you speak to being safe and being sexy or sensual and in our pleasure?
I think it's very complex because it depends very much about how much trauma that woman had based on her past experiences. And, you know, we have also a lot of trauma that we absorb just by watching TV and series that's about, you know, murderers and rapists and stuff like that. But I think that basically you're very much, I'm agreeing with everything you say there. And I think if women come from a much more traumatic experience, they need to learn to trust their body in a more you know, profound. They need to heal the trauma so they can relax and trust their body in a profound way. And sometimes we, you know, there's no guarantees.
Yeah, it's true.
Totally safe, and there are some people that are just real plain trained to trick us. So we can't control.
Yeah.
I don't want women to think that I should have sensed it, you know, because sometimes the real psychopath's gonna really be able to trick you.
Yeah. Yeah, that is something in my past that I've had to come to terms with and forgive myself.
Yeah.
And I can come up with all of the reasons. Oh, my mom died when I was, you know, grieving a lot. Oh, I was a new mom and sleep deprived. Like, I have all my justifications and reasons, but ultimately it just comes down to such deep self-compassion that all we can ever do is our best, but nothing can break us. And we, you know, that core relationship with ourself is always there. And we can always get back up again. And I'm so glad that you do the work that you do to help us get back up. You're awesome. I adore you. You're friggin' awesome.
So let me totally. It's mutual, Lana. Just
love
the way you talk. You definitely, it's clear that you're very much embodying your philosophy, you know. You sound so much in it. We're having a lot of pleasure talking with you here.
Yeah,
oh, well, and I am grateful because I went to my pole dancing class last night, and I'm talking to you today, and I have a date tonight, and I know it's going to be a different date because of this conversation. And I'm very excited.
Awesome.
I wore my big eight-inch sparkly pink stripper shoes in class last night, and I felt so amazing. So I'm just going to reiterate all the websites and the links for people, and then I'll ask you one last question, then I will let you go this time, and I hope I have you back on the show again, and I can tell my community more about you through my newsletters and my YouTube videos. But again, everybody, alanapratt.com/Celeste Danielle for the book Cockfidence, The Extraordinary Lover's Guide to Being the Man You Want to Be and Driving Women Wild, and I'll spell that, alanapratt.com/Celeste, C-E-L-E-S-T-E, Danielle, D-A-N-I-E-L-L-E, Celeste Danielle. Grab that book. Stay in connection with these wonderful women, especially you men. There's a course coming up in January that if you're in the San Francisco area or you love to go to the San Francisco area, it sure sounds delicious. I'd sure like to be a fly on the wall for that one. And again, their website is CelesteandDanielle.com to learn more about them. What is the last delicious thought from each of you that you would like to leave the listeners with today?
That's always been a hard question. Like in the
that's
moment,
a hard
realm,
question.
I don't know. I guess it has to be something about. I'm thinking a lot about love these days and what that really means. And to me, love means being true to who we are and supporting the people that we care about in being true to who they are. And the more that we work our edges around our fears in the face of those things, the deeper love and intimacy we get to have. So I'm excited about that in my life and helping people get there in theirs.
Mmm, delicious. And Danielle?
She made me cry now.
She gave me shivers. I got shivers all over my body. Yeah.
I'm thinking about love in the world these days, because, you know, there's the Middle Eastern conflict forever and ever, and part of my, you know, ancestors, my family, and it breaks my heart, I have to tell you, because I think that if people open their hearts and really be able, like, if my dream is to be able to bring this work to the bigger picture of life in the world, that people will have peace negotiation instead of trying to, you know, like, kill each other. People will be able to really see the other person is human and suffering and loving just the way they are. That's my thoughts recently.
Mm. Well, let's just imagine we're all hugging right now and we're sitting in your car and our hearts are open, because when I first, like, went to your site the other day to get all organized before our interview, and even right off the bat during our interview, I mean, I know what I know. I'm proud of myself that I've created books and CDs and DVDs and all the rest of it, and yet promoting you as a like-minded sister, like, I know my shit, I know what I'm talking about, yet I'd much rather promote you to the world and have my Intimate Conversations Live be on a TV show and talk about all of our colleagues in the world that do this great work. I feel more like a portal for all people like us that are lifting humanity. And so I just want to thank you that you've ignited my purpose or my vision to the next level by being who you are. And I just adore you. I celebrate you. I'm grateful that you're on this planet. I can't wait to meet in person at some point. And so thank you. Thank you so much for this delicious conversation today. And I hope that all of you listening just open your heart even just a little bit more and drink in the wisdom, the insights, the love, the deliciousness, the permission to be you and to take that into your day today. And just open wide as you walk out that door. Let the sunshine penetrate and warm that beautiful heart of yours and just warm your curves and your edges and just know that Celeste and Danielle and I love you and believe in you, and we're so grateful you were with us today on the show. And until next time on Intimate Conversations Live, big hugs and kisses to all of you. Thank you, Celeste and Danielle. All my love.
Thank you. Care.